Good morning. It's good to be here. It's good to see you. I was thinking about my grandfather this morning. I had the privilege to take my grandfather to church one of the last Sundays that he went to church before he passed away. And I remember when we got into the car, he just broke down and started crying. His body was weak. He was feeling a lot of pain, some anxiety. He started crying and said, "I can't do much, but I love to go to church." I don't know if he ever went to church after that. I've never forgotten that. Is that your testimony this morning? You love to go to church. I invite you to turn in your Bibles, if you have them, to the book of Nehemiah. We have been preaching messages from the book of Nehemiah. As I was reflecting on the message for today over the course of the last few weeks, I was thinking about the wall that Nehemiah and the people of God built, and I was thinking about it that, yes, it took 52 days to build this wall. I was trying to relate that to myself and what I've been doing in the last 52 days. I got to thinking about it, and I did a little checking, and I realized it has been 10 weeks or 70 days since I last preached here. That kind of surprised me a little bit. We did have a lot of visitors this summer with the Bible school and family conference and things like that. But 70 days does seem kind of like a long time, and if a preacher doesn't preach for 70 days, he's maybe a little bit like a baker who doesn't bake for 70 days. That first loaf of bread might be just a little doughy in the middle or a little crusty around the edges. So bear with me this morning. I've titled the message today, God's City, People, Problems, and Priorities. And our message scope is going to be part of chapter 6 of Nehemiah and all of chapter 7. The purpose of this series of sermons from the book of Nehemiah is for us to know that God is glorifying his great name by the works that he is doing in the world. He does that by rebuilding and redeeming that which is broken and lost. God is building a dwelling place for his people. And God uses people, his people. He invites them to work with him in cooperation to do this great work of his. And what a privilege it is to be part of that great work. I trust you feel that way this morning. And there are comparisons to the story of Nehemiah and the story of God's people at Dunmore East Christian Fellowship. Nehemiah, as a leader, is a type of Christ, who is the leader and the head of this church. The people of Israel are a lot like the people of this church today. And we have an adversary. We dedicated one sermon to talking about our adversary, Sanballat, and his friends Tobiah and Geshem, were the enemies of Nehemiah and the people of God. We have an adversary, the devil, who is seeking to destroy the things that God is doing in this place. There are also interpersonal relational difficulties and challenges that we face from time to time, misunderstandings and human selfishness that threatens the work of God. From the inside, the last sermon that I preached was from chapter 5, Walls Between Builders. And there we looked at how the work was stopped and could have ceased had there not been intervention. But what was happening in chapter 5 is people were taking advantage of each other. But the work kept on, and the work keeps going on. Jesus said, "Upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it." So today we come to an epic verse, a pinnacle point of the book of Nehemiah, and it is chapter 6, verse 15, where Nehemiah records, "So the wall was finished on the 25th day of Elul in 52 days. So what had been languishing in disrepair for over 100 years was rebuilt and completed in 52 days. It's a supernatural accomplishment. But it's not only a supernatural accomplishment, was it? Because something that's supernatural is done only by God. And we know from our earlier studies that God used people to do the work. So it was also a human effort. God working supernaturally with humans to accomplish his work. And it reminds me of the verse that we learned during Bible school from Ephesians 3, where Paul says that, well, he says it this way, "Now to him who is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think." But then he goes on to say, "According to the power that works in us." So God is not just doing these amazing things, these miraculous supernatural things, which he would be well capable of doing in the world, but he's doing it according to the power that he has placed within his people. And that's how he is accomplishing the work that he's doing in the world, according to the power that works in us. So we've experienced the power of God in our lives, in the things that he's called us to do, both personally and as a congregation. We look back at life. If you're a believer, you've followed Christ for some time, you can think of times when you were like the children of Israel. The walls were there. The work needed to be done. And it was a great task. It didn't look possible for you to do it. Looking back, you said, "Wow, I just had this, there was this power that was there, and I got it accomplished." I don't know how you teachers are feeling about the first day of school that's looming in just a few days, but I know how I felt the week before I first started teaching school about 30 years ago. My thought was, "I can't do this." But looking back, I can definitely see the power of God and how he helped me. We all know what it's like to feel this sense of accomplishment when we've completed something. And you would have a story, I would have a story, but in many, many ways, in many parts of life, no matter if it's in a spiritual context or in a physical setting, there's a sense of accomplishment when we've done something. I remember a large house that we were building, and we had spent months there doing the work. And finally, the scaffolding was taken down, the job site was cleaned, and for the last time, we left that. We took some photos before we left. There was a sense of accomplishment. We looked at that structure and we said, "Wow, we were involved in that. That was our work. That's incredible." We know what it's like to look back after a project is over, something big, and say, "We did that." The church house got cleaned in the last 2 weeks. That's a sense of accomplishment. And many of you had a part in that. Thank you. Sometimes the finish comes sooner than we expect. 52 days isn't really a very long time. I was thinking of my friend, who is older than me, and raised 5 boys in his home, he and his wife. And their sons, one by one, got married. And he told the story of the time when his youngest son started packing his suitcases, and carried the suitcases down the steps into his waiting car. And then he and his wife watched as his son drove out the driveway to go to his anticipated wedding. And he and his wife just looked at each other and said, "It's over. It's finished. All that work, all those years, it's done. I've not come to that place yet in life, but I've come to some points in my life where I realize that the things that we are in the middle of that seem to be all-consuming and all-gripping and keep us busy and occupied will soon be over." And I share that with you as young parents especially. This busy time of your life is only a season, and it will soon be past as well. Sometimes, when we finish something big and momentous, we are left wondering, we ask this question: what's next? Or we might say, what was the purpose of all that? You've poured your life into something and now it's over. Sometimes the next steps might seem unclear, uncertain. Some of you are experiencing that right now. It might be something new. Some of you are contemplating finishing up a time of serving here in Ireland. Or it might be a change of career. Or like my friend, a certain season of life of parenting has ended. And I want us to know this morning that God has a solid purpose for each season of our life. And everything that he has already accomplished in us has a reason. And God will give us and God will show us a clear direction for the path ahead, for what comes next. And I want us to see that this morning in this sermon, because the rest of it will explore what comes next for Nehemiah and the people of God. And I want to share these lessons with you to help us together understand what God wants for us next. Nehemiah has 13 chapters, and with God's help, we'll go through the entire book of Nehemiah, hopefully not in 10-week intervals. But like I said, I want to look at the rest of chapter 6 and all of chapter 7 today in the minutes that we have together. And I should also maybe just say this to you for some trivia. Nehemiah chapter 7, take a look at it. It has 73 verses. It would be number 6 in Bible chapters with the most verses. It comes number 6. Does someone know what Bible chapter has the most verses? Anyone?
Psalm 119.
That's correct. That's right. And Nehemiah is number 6. But I also want to say that God took half of the book of Nehemiah to build a wall. And he's going to take half of the book of Nehemiah now to build for himself a people. And so that's the direction we're going: people, problems, and priorities. We're going to meet a few of the people of this newly walled city of Jerusalem. We're going to look at some of the problems that they faced, and we're going to look at what was a high priority for Nehemiah and the people of the city. People, problems, and priorities. These words are connected not only because they begin with the same letter. We say sometimes wherever there's people, we can just expect there's going to be problems. And we know that's probably all too true. But I'd like for us to consider this, that wherever there is a group of people who have right and unified priorities, they will be in a place to much more easily deal with the problems that they encounter. So let's look at the problems. One problem cropped up almost immediately. And just like it often goes, after a spiritual high, there is a valley. So the wall is done. Hallelujah. And then we read, and I'm going to read verses 16 to 19, and it happened when all our enemies heard of it, and all the nations around us saw these things, that they were very disheartened in their own eyes, for they perceived that this work was done by our God. So far, so good. Also in those days, the nobles of Judah sent many letters to Tobiah, and the letters of Tobiah came to them. For many in Judah were pledged to him, because he was the son-in-law of Shechaniah, the son of Era. And his son, Jehohanan, had married the daughter of Meshulam, the son of Berechiah. Also they reported his good deeds before me and reported my words to him. And Tobiah sent letters to frighten me. So here we have a man who has appeared before in the book of Nehemiah, and unfortunately we will find him again later on. While the enemies of God were stunned into silence, this was one enemy who was not stunned into silence. Tobiah, the friend of Sanballat, the adversary of the people of God. Tobiah, the man who had once mocked the work that was being done by saying, if a fox goes up on this wall, it will fall over. Well, it didn't fall over. He was proven wrong. Here we find a man, Tobiah, who was, this man was connected politically to the nobles and the rulers of Judah. And he also had an affinity. He had a marriage alliance with two influential families of the people of God. And we also read that he did good deeds, and his good deeds were reported to Nehemiah. But this man was up to no good. This man was not a friend of the people of God. And he threatened Nehemiah with letters and tried to frighten him. And I was thinking, what can we compare this Tobiah to today? Because we have this beautiful city where the walls are completed, and God has intended this for this city to be the habitation where he lives among his people. And Nehemiah was faithful in building the walls, and Tobiah had threatened from the outside. Now the walls are done. The gates are hung, as we would read in verse 1 of chapter 7. And still Tobiah has this unsavory influence to what's going on inside the walls. And I thought about the flesh. We read about him a little bit this morning in Romans chapter 8. The flesh, my flesh. My flesh is the enemy of all that is beautiful and all that God wants to do. In fact, Galatians 5 tells us that my flesh is not the friend of God's Spirit. God's Spirit wants to do a work, and my flesh is the enemy of the Spirit of God. And in Galatians, we also read a list of the works of the flesh. Let me read those for you. And sometimes, as Christians, our minds can get dulled when we hear the beginning of this list, because we think, well, this doesn't apply to me. This is probably talking about someone else. But Galatians 5:19 says, now the works of the flesh are evident, which are adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lewdness. So we're all still good, right? That doesn't apply to us as Christians, right? So we may think, but the list is not complete. Idolatry, sorcery, hatred, contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, dissensions, heresies. How are we doing by now? Envies, murders, drunkenness, revelries, and the like. of which I tell you beforehand, just as I also told you in time past, that those who practice such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. So we have this beautiful, safe environment for God's people, and it is being threatened to ruin by a man called Tobiah, which I will just liken to the flesh, because we can have something beautiful. A beautiful environment, a beautiful church, a beautiful family, a beautiful relationship that the flesh can ruin and destroy. This is a problem. This is a problem we deal with. We deal with it in our personal lives, and we deal with these things among ourselves. Do we face problems with idolatry, or jealousy, or outbursts of wrath, or selfish ambitions? As I think of my life in the last week, did I have any selfish ambitions? Yes, I did. So I'm battling with my flesh. I find a really good lesson for us for how Nehemiah dealt with this problem of Tobiah. And I think it's instructive for us for how we can deal with this enemy of all that is good and beautiful and right. I'm going to talk now about some of the priorities of Nehemiah, because we don't really find him getting all overwrought about the problem. But instead, he went on about the priorities. And he made some good moves and led out in some very good priorities that effectively dealt with this problem, the problem of Tobiah. Because Tobiah, though he couldn't tear the wall down, even though he was probably like a little bit like a fox himself, he was still threatening to infiltrate what God was doing inside the city. The Great Wall of China, probably one of the most imposing structures that was ever built, and withheld many armies from entering the various Chinese dynasties over and their empire over the years. The few times the wall was breached was when someone who was to be a gatekeeper was bribed or threatened to and opened the gate and let the soldiers and horses through. So let's look at some priorities of Nehemiah. Priorities of the city of God, priorities for us. Verses 2 and 3, I gave charge of Jerusalem to my brother Hanani, and Hanani the leader of the citadel, for he was a faithful man and feared God more than many. And I said to them, do not let the gates of Jerusalem be opened until the sun is hot. And while they stand guard, let them shut and bar the doors, and appoint guards from among the inhabitants of Jerusalem, one at his watch station and another in front of his own house. This was of high priority for Nehemiah. And I failed to read verse 1. I will do that because it's important that we keep the priorities in order. Then it was when the wall was built and I had hung the doors, when the gatekeepers, the singers, and the Levites had been appointed. So organizing for worship was one of the high priorities of Nehemiah, to appoint singers and Levites. These were people who were called to lead Israel to worship. And there is just a high value placed throughout the Bible, in the Old Testament, of God's people worshiping him and being led into worship through song and with the help of the Levites. And I'm thankful this morning for the priority that we have here of music and singing. And I believe that is something that will help us as we as we deal with our enemies is to focus on God and our priority of worshiping Him. So one thing that Nehemiah did was he organized almost immediately after the wall was built for worship to resume in Jerusalem. Like I said, I'm thankful for the music that we have among us, and I'm thankful for groups who occasionally volunteer to sing. And we had a group that volunteered last evening. I was going to ask a group to sing, and they beat me to it. So, school teachers, would you come forward and share your song? And may it be a blessing to the congregation as they sing. Call to us as the people of God. There was a call to the saints, and there was also a personal call to our soul. And when we focus and prioritize that, and we really mean it, doesn't that just really help with some of the things, the problems that we may be tempted to face that come from our flesh? I believe so. That's one example. But Nehemiah prioritized the organization of the worship of God. Another thing that he did, and we read this in verse 2, he charged leaders to lead in Jerusalem. It's important that the city of God has leaders. And these men were Hanani, his brother, who had already proven himself as a faithful messenger, and Hananiah, who is a man who is called faithful. and a God-fearing man more than many. One of their responsibilities was to be, they were responsible for the guarding of the gates, what came in and out of the gates of the city. The gates were that place of vulnerability in the city that needed to be guarded. As I think about Dunmore East Christian Fellowship, I'd like to invite the pastors, the ministers, the leaders, the shepherds to stand. Would you please do that? And they're kind of all handily in one spot here. Brother Kendall is not here. Turn to Titus. Titus chapter 1. Because what Nehemiah did in Nehemiah 7 is very similar to what Paul instructs Titus to do. And we're going to read those verses in Titus chapter 1. We're going to read verses 5 through 9. And I'm not going to assign you a verse. There's five verses and Kendall is missing, so I'll read one. I'll read verses 1 and 9, and the three of you could each pick a verse. Okay, I'll read verse 5. For this reason I left you in Crete, that you should set in order the things that are lacking and appoint elders in every city as I commanded you.
Go. If a man is blameless, the husband of one wife, having faithful children, not accused of dissipation or insubordination.
Or a bishop must be blameless and the Spirit of God, not self-willed, not quick-tempered, not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, but hospitable, a lover of what is good, sober-minded, just, holy, self-controlled.
Holding fast the faithful word as he has been taught, that he may be able by sound doctrine both to exhort and convict those who contradict. Thank you, brothers. You can just stay standing for a little bit. It's a blessing to serve with a team like this. These instructions to Titus are serious instructions. Leading the people of God is an awesome responsibility. It's a responsibility that men will need to give an account of before God. And it's a responsibility that makes men like me tremble. But we also know that God gives grace, and we've found his grace to be sufficient. Okay, brothers, sit down. Thank you for standing. Nehemiah knew when it was time to charge other leaders. I'm impressed with Nehemiah. He didn't look for a way to extend his time of leadership. He didn't try to make an amendment to the Jerusalem Constitution or change the term limits or something like that. He sensed when it was time to hand over leadership, and he had two faithful men who he handed the leadership over to. Leaders in churches, including here at Dunmore East, need to prepare others to lead. You saw some gray hairs among the four men who are standing. I think even Josiah has a few more gray hairs than he used to have. We're in a time of transition, and we always are as the people of God. And I believe it's important, it's wise, it's necessary to be thinking about that as a congregation. I was ordained almost 18 years ago, and I have vivid memories of that time, so it doesn't seem like a very long time ago. It seems like a very short time ago, and I wonder how can it be? But then I realized that, well, 18 years is about the time it takes for an infant to grow to be an adult. And so that is more of a significant amount of time than I may think. And then I think of 18 years plus now, should the Lord tarry. And I realized that in those 18 years here at Dunmore East, I don't want to be in the same role that I am now. I don't feel that would be wise. And so we need to be thinking about that. I need to be thinking about that, to be wise and careful and intentional about who will lead this congregation, who will be the pastors and the shepherds among us. So that's something that we as a congregation need to think about. Faithful leadership for God's people was something that was a high priority to Nehemiah. Another thing we notice in verse 3, and we have 70 more verses to go. We're not going to go through all those verses as methodically as I have been going through the first several. Watchmen were appointed. There were watch stations to be manned, and each house needed to be guarded. I don't know what that looked like. But I have a very vivid picture in my mind of a man standing in front of his own house. And in that house is his wife, and in that house are his children. And though there are tall walls around him that God has put there, there is still that responsibility for that man, for that father, to guard his own household. Fathers, stand. Grab a songbook, please. All the men who are fathers here, would you please stand? I don't know what this is going to sound like, but we're going to give it a try. Number 352. And if the first verse doesn't go well, we'll enlist the help of the rest of you. But I think it will go okay. Thank you for standing, fathers. You have a very important role in this congregation and with your families. Okay? Let's sing verses 1 and 2.
Rise up, O men of God, have done with lesser things. Give heart and soul and mind and strength to serve the King of Kings. Rise up, O men of God, His kingdom tarries long. Bring in the day of brotherhood and end the night of wrong.
Thank you. You may sit down. God bless you as you stand in front of your house and watch. Another high priority for Nehemiah came with another problem. The problem was, now the city was large and spacious, but the people in it were few, and the houses were not rebuilt. And that could seem like a real problem. What are we going to do? We need people in the city. Do we put a recruitment effort out to get people to come to the city? The houses are in disrepair. What do we do? Do we have a campaign to rebuild the houses of Jerusalem? Well, Nehemiah waited to hear what God had to say. That's a good thing for us to do, too, when we come up short and don't have an answer for our problem. So God, in verse 5, put something into Nehemiah's heart. And in a nutshell, this is what God said: work with the people that you have. And we could unpack this over the course of, 60-some verses? But what took place is amazing. They found a genealogical record of the genealogies of the people who had left Babylon and had come back to Judah and settled there. And you look over that list, and it's one of those lists in the Bible that our eyes can get heavy on when we read that in our personal devotions. In the First Chronicles, is about 1 through 9, has another list like that. 9 chapters of genealogies. We go into other places in the Old Testament, and we wonder, why are these people, why are these names here? So just let your eyes scan over chapter 7. We have the sons of this man, and the total of the sons of this man were this, and these men from this place, the total of them was this, and on and on and on. One thing we can learn from this is God knows his people, and God cares about every single one of them. Because the total of the list, and we find that in verse 66 of chapter 7, is 42,360 people. What is amazing is that this represents only about 2% of the people that had been taken captive and were and their descendants who were still in Persia. These were the faithful ones. These were the people that really meant business. These were the people, maybe they were the adventurous, the ones who were willing to come back to the land of promise. Yeah, 42,360 people is a lot more than we have here this morning, but a relatively small group of people. God told Nehemiah, I believe, work with the people that you have. And this is my challenge for us this morning. Sometimes we can become wistful. Maybe as young people, we can think about our small youth group or something like that. We think of another youth group in another church or community and think, wow, you know, that would just be our youth group. Wow, we would really have something. Or we can think about our small church. Our church is quite small. Or we can think of another organization, another employer, and a situation that would just be so much more ideal there. God keeps telling us, and God keeps reminding me, work with the people I've given you. Don't worry about the empty city. Don't wish for all the people that you think should be here. Don't dream about all the people that you would like to be have here with you. Work with who you have. Prioritize the people in your lives. And here at Dunmore East, I think we have about 45 members of the church here and about 110, roughly, people who consider Dunmore East their church home. And about 25 households. We're not that big, but we are a people, a gathered people. And I'm so thankful this morning to be part of this body, a part of this group of people. And I'm glad that God chooses who He has brought to this place. I had another assignment. I'm not going to give it, and that was for all of us to stand and remind ourselves that we are part of the people of God. But I'm thankful that you're here this morning. I'm glad that you're part of God's people. It's an honor to be part of something like this with you. Thank you for your faithfulness. There is a group of people that I find in Nehemiah 7 that I bumped into these people, not physically, but in reading, and I found them over and over again. We find them in verse 46 and then again in verse 60. They're called the Nethinim. The Nethinim were a people whose name means the given or the devoted. These people, you remember the story in Joshua 9, where the Gibeonites came to Joshua and the people of Israel and tricked them into believing that they were from a faraway land, and they made a truce with these people. Instead of killing them, they spared their lives. But then part of their sentence was that they were to become the slaves, the servants of the people of God. Well, years and years and years went by, and some of them served the Levites. And the Nethinim, as they were then called, were descendants, either physical descendants, or they had joined this group of people over time. People who, almost like a religious order, who were willing to dedicate and devote their lives to serving God in His temple and in His tabernacle. And these people were taken with the children of Israel to Babylon. And some of them, 392 of them, according to the record in chapter 7, came back with the 42 some thousand Jews. Even though they weren't ethnic children of Israel, they were very much included among the people of God because they loved to serve. So I was thinking about the unique situation that we have here at Dunmore East, of a group of people who is sometimes rotating, and it seems way too fast sometimes. We have volunteers here at Dunmore East and also out at Rathgormack who come and they commit to serve for a year or two or three or longer. Their purpose for being here is to serve. And my word to you this morning is what you do often may seem menial. It may seem unspectacular. You may wonder, what's the purpose? Why am I here? You may be tempted with thoughts like that sometimes. I want to tell you that you have a role, you have a purpose here. These people in Nehemiah's time were very needed in the worship, in the service of God. And you are very needed here as well. You are appreciated. The work that you do is valuable. And God bless you for your willingness to be here among us for the time that you are here. Your willingness to serve. You are part of God's people here. I was just impressed with these people, the Nethinim. Okay, to summarize. People. God values his people highly. He took the first half of the book of Nehemiah to build a city for the people of God. He will take the last half of the book of Nehemiah to build a people to dwell in his city. Problems. Where there are people, yes, there will be problems. Because we have an enemy who is bent on destroying us. And that enemy often wells up with inside of us. It's my flesh. But fear not, this enemy is crucifiable, it's conquerable. We are called to crucify the flesh. The problems that we have that come up from our fleshly desires do not need to control us. And priorities. When we as a people have clear, right, good, and holy priorities, and we have those priorities as a collective body, there's no problem that we cannot overcome. There's nothing that will keep us from achieving our goal. So, to end, go back to verse 16. And notice how the enemies of God were disheartened when they saw and perceived that the work was done by God. May the enemies of God, whoever they are, be disheartened by what takes place here at Dunmore East Christian Fellowship and all that takes place from this congregation. And then conversely, may the friends of God, may the people of God be heartened when they perceive that this is the work of God.